So great to be with you. We've just been enjoying our time here with all of you, with the pastors. Good fellowship. Good fellowship together. Now, I'm just excited for you. I'm excited for where God has brought this church. I mean, it's so evident the work of the Lord in your lives. And so exciting where God wants to bring you. I mean, we don't know where God wants to bring you, but I'm sure He's going to reveal it as you walk in the future. And I'm excited for you. You're in a good position. Please turn to Hebrews chapter 13. That was a wonderful time in worship. It's great to feel the presence of God. You know, you could feel that at home too. God wants to be with you wherever you are. Hebrews 13. Let's suppose, I'm going to give you a scenario. Let's suppose social services rung up your church. Any church. The average church. And they said, we have a 9-year-old boy. He's been in 9 different foster homes. This boy's been sexually abused. He's been beat around. He's been moved around. And he's aggressive towards others. He bites. He can't behave in school. We don't know what else to do with this boy. We have nowhere else to put him. We're thinking of institutionalizing him. No foster homes can't handle him anymore. Would you take him, church? That's their question. To the average church. What would be the response of the average church to this? Well, we're not equipped to handle a boy like that. Well, maybe there's places for children like that, aren't there? That would most likely be the average response in our Western society to that question. It's a curious thing, though, because we who boast in the power of God are afraid to take on a 9-year-old boy with problems. That's a curious thing. We who boast that we have all the answers and have the word of life that can set the captive free are afraid to take on this 9-year-old foster child. Now, be careful. Because what about if I tipped you off ahead of time and I said to you, well, before you give a response, let me tell you something. This is really not a 9-year-old boy. This is an angel unaware. And God is sending him to test your church to see what you will do. And would God do that? Look at Hebrews chapter 13, verse 2. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by this some have entertained angels without knowing it. God is sending angels in our midst to test our mercy. So if I said to you ahead of time, this is an angel, then what would you do? What would the average church do? Anybody have any idea? If you raise your hand if you have an idea. Bring him on. We can find a place for him. We can create a place for him. We'll make it work. But then I said to you, well, wait a minute. He's really not an angel unaware, but he is one made precious and valuable and made in the image of Almighty God. One who God created. This is a precious soul to God. Then would you take him? See, we have to begin to see foster children in this light. Not for the label that we put on them, but to see them as Jesus sees them. Yes, he has a lot of problems, but he's one, a soul made precious. Don't you have problems? And don't I? This is a soul created that's been kicked around in this world, and he's valuable to God. If we're going to extend mercy, we have to get past all the labels that we see people with. I want to speak to you tonight about an unreached people group right in the midst of the UK. Right in the midst of the US. It's right in the midst of the Western world. I say an unreached people group because the church doesn't see these people. And these are people that need to see God's mercy, as was sung today. They need to see it. I was speaking to you about the Western orphan. We call them foster children. So clever we are. We did away with our orphan problem. We just changed their name. Call them foster children. I want to speak to you about this subject. And I spoke to you last January about this, but I want to speak part two of this message. If you want to hear part one, you can go to the Kingdom Faith website, and it's up there. I want to speak to you the second part. I want to give you new and additional material to this subject. I have a good friend, my wife and I have good friends, that took in a foster girl. This girl was abused terribly, emotionally, physically, sexually. Her birth parents they burnt her feet, leaving scars. And these friends of ours took her into their home. And she did well for a period of time, did really well. But as a young teen, she could not release the anger that was building up in her. A lot of healing took place in her life. She's a special girl, but there was an anger that built up and she couldn't release it. And this family found themselves struggling with dealing with this girl. She became violent. She became aggressive. She even killed the family bird one night. Once she tasted that, she started threatening to kill her brother. And this mother would sleep, and our friend of ours, she used to sleep in front of her door at night, just for safety, to keep this woman from killing their son, who they adopted as well. She was desperate. In the area where she lived, she went from church to church asking for help. And nobody wanted to help her. Can I speak to your reality today? Nobody wanted to help her. No church wanted to help her. Even the last church that they settled in, they were approached by the leadership and they asked her to stop talking about this issue because it's bothering people. If a pastor from Romania, you all know Romania has an orphan problem, or a pastor from South Africa, we know the situation with AIDS and orphans there. Kurt and I work in both countries. If they flew here, and we picked them up at Gatwick Airport, or they flew to JFK in New York, and we picked them up, and they said to us, they met us at the airport, we're sitting down for coffee, and they said, listen, we've come. We've come because we're struggling with an orphan problem in our country. And we've come here because we've heard that in the UK there's 40, 50, 60,000 orphans. Actually, not the UK, just England alone. 40, 50, 60,000 orphans, foster children. And we've heard about your churches here. We've heard how strong they are, how powerful they are. Surely you have your orphan problem all sorted out. Or they came to JFK Airport in New York and they said, we heard about in America there's between 600 and 800,000 orphans. And they heard about the powerful churches that they watch on TV from America, and they said, surely they have it all sorted out. Surely they're doing something for orphans. And they came and they said to us, please now show us, church, what you're doing. What you're doing for all these orphans in your midst. Where would we take them? What would we show them? They're coming to us for answers. We have this problem. We want to know what you're doing so we could learn from you. What would we show them? Many of our orphan children end up in our prisons. They end up homeless. I said the last time between 25 and 30% of children going through foster care will end up homeless. They end up in our mental institutions. They end up on drugs, alcohol, teen pregnancy. The list goes on and on. Why is it that the Western Church doesn't feel obligated to do more for its own foster children? I've looked at this question in many different ways, and I believe one reason, one of the major reasons, is because we don't even see them as orphans. We change the name, we call them foster children, we don't call them orphans. We don't see them as orphans. I want to look at this for a few minutes, as I believe it's very important for us to establish who these children are. Are they orphans, or are they not? I was at a church in the U.S., and a woman came up to me, and she said, our foster children here, they're not real orphans like your orphans in Romania. She said, or our foster children have parents that are alive. So she automatically assumed that the orphans in Romania, their parents had died. And she said, our orphans are not real orphans because of that. Hear this. When we try to classify foster children not as real orphans, we feel justified when we as a church do nothing for them. Let me say it again. When we try to classify foster children not as real orphans, it makes us feel justified when we as a church do nothing for them. I was doing a True Religion conference. Well, let me say this. The Bible doesn't say to care for foster children in their distress, does it? The Bible says care for orphans in their distress. So if we could not see them as orphans, then we don't have to care for them. See, it makes us feel justified when we don't call them orphans. They're foster children. They're foster children. They're in the system. They're foster children. And we feel justified. We feel we're out of God's command. That's not us. That's South Africa. That's Romania. That's China. That's not us. I was doing a True Religion conference here in the UK a couple of years ago. And the people that came, the only thing they knew about the conference was the title, True Religion. So when we began the conference, I broke them into groups and I asked them two questions. I said, tell me, who are the orphans and where are the orphans? That was it. They had 10 minutes. They broke. They all talked. They got back and we asked each group. They were all over the world. They were in China. They were in Russia. They were in Africa. They were in India. They were all over the world. Not one person mentioned orphans in the UK. Not one. Because we don't classify them as real orphans. Well, let's look at that. Are they real orphans or are they not? Let's examine this thinking. Now, many of you have heard the tragic stories of Romanian orphans. You remember all the reports a few years ago. Now, how many of you would say, looking at those reports, looking at the situation of those children, they're not real orphans? 99 point something% of all the children I've seen in Romania over my 14 years of ministry there have parents that are alive. Those children are exactly the same as children here. They're orphans. They're exactly the same as our foster children in the UK or the US. Exactly the same. Even in South Africa, where many, many are dying of AIDS, leaving children as orphans, even there, the majority of children in orphanages in South Africa are not there because their parents died. They're there because of other reasons. The most modern orphans are removed from the home because of abuse, neglect, drug use, abandonment, and other problems. The cases where parents die, it tends to be that the relatives tend to take the children into the home. I studied the history of orphans, and especially here in Europe, and I was very surprised to learn that most of the orphans in history were not orphaned because of the death of parents. Most were orphaned because of abandonment. When you look at the history in Europe here. The only exception to that I found was in times of plague, times of disaster. Now, when we, in this whole discussion of are they orphans, are they not orphans, the only thing that really matters is the child's perspective, not ours. And if you ask any one of these foster children who are bounced around your system, if they're orphans, what will they tell you? Yes, we don't have parents. We need parents. I want parents. I'm an orphan. They will tell you that. Believe me, I've worked with them for 14 years. They will tell you that. They're orphans. And you know, even if we don't classify them as orphans, even if you want to keep the title foster children, doesn't our Christianity compel us to rescue and help a hurt child? That's the issue. The love of Christ is compelling us. I think some of you social workers, you would do well to start calling them orphans again. You would probably get more response from people. Last time I was here, I brought in a stack of papers that I printed off of your websites here in the UK of your orphans. And I distributed them to you and I read some of them. You know, if I had that stack here, you could go to the UK websites. It was so easy for me, a few clicks, and you could see all your orphans. You could see those who are available for adoption. You could see the foster children. You could read their stories. You could see their pictures. You could enter into their pain and feel just with a click of the mouse. But if I brought that, if we had that stack here and I said to you, if we knew that all these orphans were in Africa, or all these orphans were in India, or all these orphans were in Romania, we would expect the church there to care for them. We would expect it. We would start charities. We would help fundraise, develop support to support the orphanages that we start overseas. We would send missionaries to work in the orphanages. This is what we do. But when they're in Western countries, when they're right under our own noses, we do nothing to help them. With all the wonderful and powerful churches in the UK and the US, this shouldn't be. This should not be. We pray for revival, don't we? I know your church is crying out for revival. Wouldn't it be wonderful to see a revival that came that included the orphan child? A revival that came that included that foster child here in the UK? Wouldn't that revival be wonderful? Why do all the revivals pass over them? Let's see that kind of revival. I was in South Africa with Kurt, and we were sitting with a group of pastors, and they were telling us about this program they had to sponsor a child in another African country. Their churches were doing that, and they were doing that personally. And I looked at them, and I said, "Well, you're just like us. You are exactly like us. You'll send some money to another country, but you won't help your own." See, it's easier to care for orphans in other countries. You could just write a check. That's easy. We have to get out of this heroic mindset when it comes to helping orphans. Many times it's more exciting to help orphans in other countries. Now, don't get me wrong. We have children's homes in Romania. I adopted 3 children from Romania. We need to help orphans in other countries. Don't get me wrong. Don't misunderstand me. But to help orphans in the UK, nobody applauds. It's unseen work, and it's unglamorous, and it's hard work. As I said, I worked 14 years in Romania, church planning and Bible teaching and working with street children, working with orphans. And many people over the years have said to me, I couldn't do that. Because if I saw those kids, I'd want to take them all. And I usually say to them, well, there's a cure for that. So you work 1 month in our children's home and you won't want to take any. See, their problems are real. Their problems are deep. It's hard work. Let me tell you, it's ministry. Helping a hurt child heal is ministry. This will cost you everything. It's cost us everything. This will cost you. It takes fasting. It takes prayer. But we have the power of God. We have His healing. We have His love. We have His grace. And we have His wisdom. I believe it's time for the local church in this country, in my country, to start doing the hard work of the gospel. The unseen work of the gospel. The work of caring for foster children in our own communities. The orphans. Turn to Job chapter 29. I believe we have to develop an attitude such as Job had. Job chapter 29, verse 11. Whoever heard me spoke well of me, and those who saw me commended me, because I rescued the poor who cried for help, and the fatherless who had none to assist him. The man who was dying blessed me. I made the widow's heart sing. My friend, let's have this kind of revival. I put on righteousness as my clothing, justice as my robe and my turban. I was eyes to the blind and feet to the lame. I was a father to the needy. I took up the case of the stranger. I broke the fangs of the wicked and snatched the victims from their teeth. Let the Lord stir our hearts with this passion. Let's read it again. Whoever heard me spoke well of me. Those who saw me commended me, because I rescued the poor who cried for help and the fatherless who had none to assist them. The man who was dying blessed me. I made the widow's heart sing. I put on righteousness as my clothing, justice as my robe and my turban. I was eyes to the blind and feet to the lame. I was a father to the needy. I took up the case of the stranger. I broke the fangs of the wicked and snatched the victims from their teeth. Boy, let your church be known by this scripture. Let it be known. Job says in verse 12, he rescued the poor who cried for help. We need a spirit of rescue back in our churches. As Pastor said, we need to bring God's mercy to others. That's a spirit of rescue. Because there are others that are suffering that need to be rescued. They need God's mercy. We need a spirit of rescue back in our churches. Our adoption of our three children was an international adoption because we are from America and we adopted children from Romania. Now, if you adopt from the UK, I don't know for sure here, but in the US, in most cases, it's absolutely free. In some cases, they'll pay you to adopt. But when you adopt internationally, it's very expensive. Now, I told you the story the last time. There were specific children that walked into our life and we were going to fight for them and bring them to our home. And God made things happen that even blew the social workers' minds. I remember when we approached an adoption agency and said, there's this one child, here she is, she's in this institution, we want to adopt her. And they said to us, this is not possible. And they said, we believe God told us to. And let's continue on. And at the end of the day, we have three of them. God will make a way. But it was very expensive for us to adopt them, and God provided the money. Now, after our adoptions were final, a friend of mine came up to me and he asked me, he said, was it hard for you to ask for money for yourself regarding our adoptions? That was a very interesting question. Because we have a ministry, we send out newsletters, we ask for money for other things. And he asked me, was it hard for you to ask for money for yourself? And I had to think about that question because I never considered our adoption of our three children as something we were doing for ourselves. I always thought of it as something we were doing for them. But it gave me an insight into the mindset we have here in the West regarding adoption, regarding caring for foster children, our orphans. When it comes to adoption, foster care is seen as an individual and personal family decision. That's the way it's seen here. It's something you do individually, it's something you've decided individually. Yes, our adoption was a personal decision, but it was also part of a bigger picture. It was part of the local church's responsibility to care for orphans. And our personal adoption was fulfilling that call of the local church with others who were doing the same. We need to make caring for foster children a ministry of the local church again. Not just a personal decision, but a ministry of the local church, where together we can do great things. Together, God can give us great ideas. See, in Romania, as I told you this morning, the church that we've worked with, a little church, in the last 14 years, they've rescued over 100 orphans. And they never view it as an individual decision. They always viewed it as, this is what the church does. The church rescues orphans, and the church is made up of individuals and families, and we work together to rescue the children. That's what we need to bring back, is that working together underneath the church umbrella, the local church umbrella. Look at Job chapter 31. Verse 13, if I have denied justice to my men servants and maid servants when they had a grievance against me, what will I do when God confronts me? What will I answer when called to account? Did not he who made me in the womb make them? Didn't the God who made me, didn't he make the foster child? Didn't he make the orphan? Didn't he make those who are hurting and suffering? Did not the same one form us both within our mothers? If I have denied the desires of the poor or let the eyes of the widow grow weary, if I have kept my bread to myself, not sharing it with the fatherless, but from my youth I reared him as would a father, and from my birth I guided the widow. If I have seen anyone perishing for lack of clothing or the needy man without a garment, and his heart did not bless me for warming him with the fleece from my sheep, if I have raise my hand against the fatherless, the orphan, knowing that I had an influence in the court, then let my arm fall from the shoulder and let it be broken off at the joint. You see Job's heart? This is the heart we need. We have to hear the orphan's cry as Job did. He heard the orphan's cry. With 60,000 orphans just in England alone, we have to begin to hear their cry. They're out of sight and they're out of mind, and we don't hear their cry. If we're ever going to do something, we have to hear their cry. I want to read the story of I read you a bunch the last time. I'm just going to read a couple this time. And here's a little girl in foster care. I want to read her story, because I think her story is very indicative of other children that are in foster care. Let's hear their cry. Let's enter into their pain tonight. Her name is Nashira, and her social worker writes and says she's fun-loving and animated. Nashira gets along well with adults, and when she is with a small group of peers, she enjoys music, dressing up in pretty clothes, stepping, dancing, and track. Nashira is a capable student who enjoys mainstream classes in her local public school. She made the honor roll in the 2002-2003 school year. She has a close protective relationship with her brother. Nashira is a sensitive youngster with a strong need for nurturance and attention. When frustrated, she may have a tantrum or cry. She's 13 years old. Individual therapy and mentor are helping her to deal with her losses and put feelings into words instead of tears. Now listen to this. Because this girl is dealing with all kinds of things. They have her in therapy. They have her in counseling. Many of these children they have on medication. They're trying to help them. They're doing the best they can. I thank God for some of these social workers. They're doing the best they can. But look what Nashira says about her situation. And I want you to hear this. What Nashira has said is, what I need most is somebody to love me. She said, yes, you're doing all these things for me. You have me in counseling. You have me in therapy. You're doing all these wonderful things to me. But what I need is just somebody to love me. That's the cry of the foster child, the British orphan. I read of a boy recently. He said this. He said his biggest fear was that nobody will love him. That's his biggest fear in life. Turn to Psalm 68, please. Psalm 68, verse 5. A father to the fatherless, a defender of widows, is God in his holy dwelling. God has declared to us who he is. He is a father of the fatherless. He is a defender of widows. And so should we be. Now, I asked a friend one time, I asked him, I said, tell me, how is God a father to the fatherless? And he thought and he said, well, somehow God by his Spirit visits those orphans that are suffering and he ministers to them and cares for them. I tend to believe God is more practical than that. Look at the next verse. God sets the lonely in families and leads forth the prisoners with singing, but the rebellious live in a sun-scorched land. See, God is not theoretical. God is not mystical. God is practical. How is He a father to the fatherless? Well, He puts them in families. That's how He does it. He does it through us. We are His hands extended into this world. We are His hearts extended to the orphan child. Here's a girl here. This one really moved me. The woman who's caring for her tells the story, and she says, talks about her, and the last part here, she says, in the bottom drawer, Linda stores her artwork from school. There is a watercolor, this is the foster mother most likely who's caring for her. She says this, there is a watercolor of sunny flowers she has inscribed to Linda from Linda. And I, you know, my children bring me things that they color. They say, for you, Daddy. They're doing it all the time. And I thought about this girl. She doesn't have anybody to call Daddy. She doesn't have anybody to call Mama. So she draws a picture and she says, to Linda, from Linda. I give it to myself. And she says, the sunset beach scene with peaceful boats is her favorite. She says in a shy whisper, this I am keeping to give to the family that adopts me. Think about the hope of this child right now. She is waiting for some family to come into her life with mercy and say, I will love you. I will care for you. She has hope. She has hope in her heart that her dreams will be answered. My friends, we can prevent homelessness. We can prevent crime. We can prevent drug addiction. We can prevent teen pregnancy by being an answer to these foster children before they ever get there. We can intervene early on in their life. It's time we stop being reactive as a church. Okay, now they're on the streets. Now we have to care for them. Now we see them. It's time we start being proactive and intervene early on in their life. Use our minds. God, we can intervene in Linda's life. Right now she's hoping. Right now she's longing for somebody to give this picture to. We can be the answer for her dreams. Because God sets the lonely in families. Practically. My daughter wrote a story. She likes to write. And she wrote the story, I'll just read you a portion of it, because I want you to hear the hope of the orphan. I want you to hear the cry of the orphan tonight. That's what we want to do tonight. We want to enter into the cry of the orphan. We want to enter into the valley of weeping, as Pastor Kurt spoke last night for the orphan child. My daughter writes this, and she says, once upon a time there lived three children that a family wanted to adopt. They liked to play toys, but the most thing they wanted was a family. They waited a long time, but they didn't complain. The other day, my daughter, my oldest daughter, she saw a t-shirt in the store. And the t-shirt was pretty rude. And it said, parents for sale. Buy one, get one free. I don't know what parent would buy that for their child. But my daughter looked at that t-shirt, and she read it. And she said this, she said, boy, those children should spend some time in an orphanage and feel what it's like. Maybe they'd appreciate their parents. I've worked with orphans for 14 years. I have three former orphans in my own home. I've heard their cry. I work with the Romanian church, and like I said before, we've seen over 100 kids rescued. You know, the longing in their heart, what I've learned all through these years, there's only one longing in their heart. When you look at these foster children, there's only one thing they long for, and that's a family. You could give them education, you could give them beautiful playgrounds, you could give them orphanages, you could paint pictures on the wall, you could do all these things. All they want is a family. That's all they want. Now, where do you find families? You find them in the government? Now, the government can provide resources, but the government cannot provide families. Do you find them in parachurch organizations, charities? Well, you find some. But you don't find the amount of families needed to care for orphans. They're limited on their personnel and their resources. Where do you find families? You find them in the local church. We are the answer to the orphan's cry. The local church is the answer to the Western orphan. The local church is the answer to the British foster child. There is no other answer. I'm convinced of that. There's no other solution but the local church. And it's time we rise and say, God, thank you for the Salvation Armies. Thank you for the government. Thank you for the good job they've done. But now it's our turn. Now it's our turn to extend mercy that you've poured out upon us. I believe it's time that we make orphan care ministries a ministry of the local church again. We actually call it a ministry. We define it. You know, even in South Africa, where Kurt and I travel, we spent 3 weeks or so every year there. And they have a huge orphan crisis. But they have local churches everywhere. I have never seen more churches in my life than I've seen in South Africa. There are churches everywhere. If you've been there, there's three or four churches on every block. There are churches everywhere. And our message to them is very simple. We say, you have everything you need to care for the orphan right here in your own country because you have the local church. And you don't need all these foreigners coming in. Thank God for them. Show you what to do. But you have everything you need right here. It's the local church. Rise up and do what God has called you to do. What has God called us to do? Turn to James chapter 1. What is God's command? This is one of the most overlooked verses in the Western world. This is pure and undefiled religion in the sight of our God and Father, to visit orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself unstained by the world. The truly religious church, according to God's definition, will care for orphans, will care for foster children. And if you visit us in Romania, you'll see. If you visit the church, you come on a Sunday service. The first three rows are all dedicated to orphans. They're filled in the church, and it's wonderful to preach there and see these kids. One of the nice things that's happened in Romania, because the children are in the church, adoptions have happened naturally. Because people have made connections with these children. They've made friendships with these children, and God has put it on their heart. Hey, you take that child into your home. This will be your son. And I've seen natural connections be made. Sometimes it's in the West here, when it comes to adoptions and stuff, you know, it's kind of strange. You see a picture of a child, and then when they're in the church, and you see them every day, and you begin to feel their heart, and they begin to feel your heart, adoptions happen naturally. It's not a difficult thing. That's why we have to bring them back into the local church. About a year ago, social services called the church in Romania and they said, we have 7 siblings that have just been abandoned. Could you possibly take all 7? We don't want to separate them. Now, it just so happened, you know, God's plan, that at that time we were opening a new children's home and we just moved 10 children out of the old homes into the new home, and it created room for 10 children. And the workers there said, send them over. We have the space. And it's wonderful to see these 7 siblings kept together. It's the most beautiful thing. And in the last year, these kids, they came in with scabies, they came in with lice, they came in destroyed. In the last year, God has transformed their life. Kind of like the healing home pastor spoke about this morning. God has transformed their life. It's wonderful to see them, the hope they now have for the future. It's very rare in the UK, it's very rare in America that you could even keep 2 siblings together. We separate siblings in our system here. That's a common thing. It's uncommon to keep 2 siblings together. Now, why is that? Well, one reason is there's not enough foster homes in order to place more than 1 sibling. in your country, there's a shortage of 8,000 foster homes. It's awful. I think this is so awful where we've come in our countries where we separate siblings. It's bad enough that they leave their mother and father for any reason. But then to separate them from their siblings? This is awful. And as a church, I believe we need to do something about that. I told the story this morning. I'll tell it again. Maybe you weren't here. But I was speaking to a pastor on one of my trips I just happened to meet. And he was from America. And I was explaining to him the situation of orphans in his own state. And he has a large church. And they're just bought a piece of land. They have a home on that land. And they're building a building. So their plan is just tear down this house. We don't need it. Once we have our structure, what do we need that house there for? And I told them the situation. In your state, siblings are separated. In your state, you have this many thousands of orphans. He said, I never knew that. I said, yeah, and I explained to him, foster children. I explained to him the whole situation. His heart was moved, and he said this. He said, when I get back to America, I'm going to approach my elders, and I'm going to talk to them about not knocking down that home, but we keep that home, and we get two or three or four of these siblings that have been separated in our state, and we reunite them in our home, and they will be a part of our church. Wouldn't that be wonderful if we did that in the UK? Wouldn't that be wonderful? If you took all these siblings that are separated here in Horsham and you said, let's reunite them in a church home. Imagine the healing. Imagine the flow of mercy towards them. My wife and I, we had the privilege of uniting three siblings that didn't even know each other. We adopted our first daughter 7 years ago, and the Romanian social workers, they told us, you know, she has a brother and sister. We said, okay, we'll get them too. And we went after them. We found them. And God made a miracle happen. And we brought the three of them into our home. And I'll tell you, there's a sibling bond. They didn't even know each other, but there's a sibling bond that's strong between them. I remember the first day my son was with my daughter, and we were just coming out of our flat, and there was a boy there who said something to my daughter that he never knew before. And he's five. And he turns to this boy and he says, you better not say anything. She's my sister. Hit you. There's a sibling bond. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could reunite these siblings? I'll tell you, it breaks social workers' hearts to split up siblings. If the church can be relevant to reuniting siblings, you'll win the respect of the government. There's over 100,000 orphans in America right now that are available for adoption. There's many, I don't know the exact numbers here, but it's in the thousands in the UK that are available for adoption right now. Most won't be adopted because they're either too old, too handicapped, or they have the wrong skin color. I hate to say it, but that's the truth as I see it. And it's a sad indictment from heaven against us all. We as Christians need to change this attitude. They are unwanted children in our society because they're too old, too handicapped, or the wrong skin color. Many unwanted children are older in the foster care system. They're not easily adopted. I saw a news interview of a boy who was just turning 18. He was aging out of foster care. That's what they call it. And they asked him, how many foster homes did you live in? He said, too many to count. But then he went on to say this, and I wrote it down. He said, social services has raised me. Programs have raised me. I've raised myself. I can never say mom or dad. I tried to say it once or twice, but it just hurt too much to say it because I knew that nothing was there. This is the cry of the older foster child here in the UK. The local church needs to become relevant to the older orphans in our own community. Those that nobody wants. Everybody wants the babies. Nobody wants the older children. We should be a voice for the voiceless. Now, it's hard work. We took in older children in my home. And I'll tell you, it's hard work because you've got to deal with all their baggage. You've got to deal with all their problems. But we have the power of the gospel. We have a power to change hearts and lives. Yes, it's hard work. It'll cost you everything. It'll cost you money. It'll cost you time. It'll cost you everything. But if we reach those older children now when there's still hope, then we won't have to try to convert them when they're in prison. Now, we're not going to save all. Let's not delude ourselves. But we can show God's kindness to all. We can show His love to all. And some will follow Jesus. Many foster children age out of the system. In my country, it's 18. I assume that's the same here. They age out of the system and then they face the world alone. We as a church can be there for them to face the world with us. Now, what we do as a church, we have to do with wisdom. With wisdom. Let me give you one example. I would not bring a foster child into my home who's older than my children who has been sexually abused. Because there's too many cases of children coming into homes and abusing other children that are in the home. We have to do things with wisdom. Not by emotion. Wisdom. We can explore other ways to care for them. Maybe a home where there's no children. There's special needs for that child. It's sad that many of these handicapped children in our society are unwanted. They're physically handicapped. They're mentally handicapped. Some have autism, mental retardation. They have learning difficulties. If we as a local church can care for these orphans, the handicapped orphans, those that no one wants, we can show the world that the most helpless have a place in God's kingdom. The most helpless have a place in God's church. We should be their answer. Those of the wrong skin color. There's an argument that says white families should not adopt black children, black families should not adopt white children. The argument goes on and on. Let me just say one thing about this. We brought three gypsy children into my home. I'll tell you what, they don't care at all about the color of my skin. You know what they care about? They care about my eyes. Do I have eyes just for them? That's all they care about. We as Christians need to change that attitude. We adopted three siblings, as I said to you, and it's not been a walk through the rose garden. It's been work. And many times, I'll tell you, I have not felt like a good father. Many times I've felt I've failed, I've blown it, I've said things that I shouldn't have said. I just kick myself and run back to God for forgiveness and start again. But even through it all, even through all my mistakes, God still works. God still brings healing. His grace is sufficient. My children, one time, my wife was away, and they said to me, they said, Daddy, could you give us some paper? And I said, yeah, here. They said, oh, we have some crayons. Said, yeah, here, take some crayons. They said, do you have a stapler? I said, yeah, okay, stapler, here. So I gave them all three, and they went outside. And they were out there for about 2 hours. And I had no idea what they were doing, but I was working, I was busy working, and they came in after about 2 hours, and they gave us these books, these three books. And all three of them sat down outside, and they made stories of their adoption journey into our home. And my first daughter, she drew a picture of when we came, and God, I know you're not going to see this, but she drew a picture of my wife and her holding her hand and walking out of the orphanage where we got her. My other two children, well, here's my son. He drew a picture of cars, and you know he's a boy. He drew a picture of cars. My other daughter drew a picture of our dogs. She loves those dogs. She drew a picture of her sister and herself all dressed in the same dress. They like to dress the same. Two pink dresses. But both of them ended their story with the same thing. And I found this fascinating. Maybe you can see this one. Look how they end their story. They talk about how they entered, that they came home, how they sat down at our table, and this is the last page. The last page of the story is, look where they are. They're safe and secure in their beds. That's how they ended their story. And my son ended it the same way. This fascinated me because it told me that they are feeling secure in our home. They are feeling safe. You see, foster children, they're constantly in survival mode. They're always surviving. They're not living. But when we can bring them to a point of security, then they can start living. Family. God says that He brings the lonely into families. Family is the place where orphan children find love and healing. Family is the place. The local church is a family. We have families within the church. This is the place. My daughter, my first daughter, in the middle of the night, a few days she was in our home, in the middle of the night we hear some noise. My daughter, as I told you today, I spoke to you last time, we got her out of a mental institution in Romania. She spent the first 3.5 years of her life rocking in a urine-soaked crib with her only toys were her fingers. They threw her away. They said, she'll never be normal, she'll never talk. And God spoke to my wife and said, bring her home. And we did. And the first few days in our home, we heard this noise one night, and my daughter threw up all over herself. And she got on all floors and she just began rocking, crying and rocking. And I remember my wife. I heard it, but my wife pops out of bed, runs over to her, picks her up, immediately embraces her, not thinking at all about the vomit that's on her. Hugs her, holds her. Just hugging her and giving her something she never felt before. And I was amazed at my wife. Here she was, a wonderful wife, but instantly she became a wonderful mother. How do you women do that? Overnight, she's just holding this little girl. Family is the place where orphan children find comfort, they find healing. Family is the place where orphans feel secure, where they blossom. Family is the place where orphans learn what family is about. God created the idea of family. This was God's idea. But foster children will one day have families of their own. How will they learn what a family is about? Which model will they emulate? Their first foster home? Their fifth foster home? Their tenth foster home? Which one will they copy? They're not going to learn what family is from books. They'll learn from example, whether good or bad. And they'll do the same in their own. My son, I was talking to him one day, and I was speaking to him about some pastors that we know, and I was speaking to him about some other Christians that we know, some other families that we know. And we were just talking about these families and these pastors, and I asked him, I said, well, of all the marriages that you have seen, which marriage do you want yours to be like? I was expecting him to point out a friend of mine, and he said, yours. You and Mama's. See, they're watching. And they will copy it one day. Family is the place where they learn about marriage, where they learn about family. Family is the place of healing. Family is the place where bonds are made and nurtured. My wife, shortly after we adopted our children, she came over to work with Kurt for 2 weeks. And my son came to me in that time, and he said to me, he was little, and he came to me, he said, Daddy, I'm almost going to cry. He's a boy. He's almost going to cry. He's got these big tears. He said, I'm almost going to cry. He said, I miss Mama. And I hugged him and I said, it's okay, you can cry. And he just started crying and crying. And I just thought about this, what I was experiencing at the moment, because this was the first time in his life he ever felt a bond like this, where he missed somebody like that. Now my wife goes, it's been a while since we adopted them, and now my wife goes away for a couple weeks at a time or 3 weeks at a time, and now they cry for different reasons. Now they cry because they have to eat Daddy's cooking. For Family is the place to develop bonds with extended family. You know, it's been great healing for my children to have parents, but it's been also great healing for my children to have grandparents. They never had it before. They never had uncles, they never had aunts, they never had cousins. And I have seen that this has been amazing healing for them, restoring what has been lost in their lives. The extended family. They love grandmoms. So we'd go over there, she spoils them and sends them home, gives them all kinds of snacks and sends them back to us. One day, my daughter, she made this poem for my father. My father is 85 years old. He fought in World War II alongside your troops. And we speak about my father to my daughter. My father speaks about his war stories to him. And all by herself, she wanted to make a poem to him, write a poem. And she wrote this poem to thank Grandpa, to thank him for what he has done for her, to help keep her free. And it was a very moving experience. We call it Veterans Day. You call it Remembrance Day? Is that it? You remember your soldiers who have died? It was our Remembrance Day, and she came to my father on Remembrance Day, and she read him this poem. And it was a very moving picture for my father, for me, to see this bond that my daughter had with her grandfather, that she so appreciated his sacrifice. Uncles. These children never had uncles before, or their uncles are lost. Family is a place where they get uncles. The uncles joke and they wrestle. They have fun. Family is a place where they get aunts. Aunts like to give hugs and kisses, and my kids don't like that so much, but they still get them anyway. They get presents from them. See, it's been good for their healing to have a healthy opinion of family life, because that will strengthen their families one day. See, we can turn it all around as a church. Everything that's been destroyed in these foster children's life, we can turn around. Now, some of you are not called to be mothers and fathers to orphans. You're not called. Some of you are not called to be mothers and fathers. But maybe you're called to be an aunt. Maybe you're called to be an uncle. Maybe you're called to be a friend. Maybe you're called to come alongside of somebody who has taken a child into their home to help assist them, to help maybe give them a break once in a while. I said this morning, one of the most spiritual things somebody ever did for us in helping our hurt child heal 24 hours a day, we were busy with that, is to come along and say, hey, why don't you take a break? And we'll watch your child for a little while. So you can be an aunt, you could be an uncle, you could be a grandparent. When you bring the orphans into the church, they can find you as a friend. Maybe you're not a mom and dad. Maybe some of you are called to be moms and dads to orphan children. And tonight, we're not asking you to adopt children. That's not the purpose of this message. We're not asking you to go out and sign up for foster care. It doesn't start there. You know where it starts? In the valley of weeping. It starts when we begin to enter into their pain. When we begin to feel what these foster children feel. Because once we can, listen, if we just go out and do these things out of emotion, you know, we're going to create some type of dead program again. But if we can enter into their pain and feel God's heart, then we're going to know God's direction. Don't be so in such a hurry. Family is a place where they learn that Jesus loves them. You could provide an atmosphere within the local church of family for these children. My son, one morning, I get up early to pray and read, and my son, when he was little, one morning I see the light on in his room. Very early in the morning, it's still dark out, and I go in his room and I say, his name's Ovidiu. I say, Ovidiu, what are you doing? It's early. He said, well, Daddy, I'm doing what you do. I'm praying. I'm reading my Bible. Family's a place where they learn about Jesus. I'm going to close in a few minutes here. My daughter, Roxana, who I told you came out of the mental institution. We have problems with her. We still have problems. We were discussing today, you know, as they get older, the problems don't go away. They just change. New challenges. And My daughter, because of her experience in the first 3.5 years of her life, she learned how to rely on herself. She learned how to withdraw from this world. She learned how to go into her own world. And that's been our challenge throughout all these years, is to get her out of her own world and get her into this world. It's been tiring. So she talks to herself. You'll find her over talking to a wall or just walking around talking to herself. You find her still doing that. And it's been hard for us to try to... She does it a whole lot less than she did. But we're trying to help her with that. And one day I was in the mall with her, and there was a group there of you could tell they had... they were adults, but they had certain mental issues that they were dealing with. And they were all at a group of table. And there was a woman there who was just talking to herself. And I'm honest with my daughter. And I took her aside without the other children hearing. And I said, Roxana, look. I said, this girl is an adult now. And she's still talking to herself. I said, sweetie, you got to choose to stop. Or when you become an adult, you'll be doing the same thing. And she took it in. And that night, we kissed them goodnight, sent them to bed. And my daughter calls me over. And she said, Daddy, come here. She said, I'm going to pray for that woman we saw today. The woman in the mall. And so I closed my eyes. She closes her eyes. And this is the girl they said would never be normal. This is the girl they said would never talk, would never amount to anything in life. She prayed this. And she said, Jesus, please give her a family so she won't talk to herself anymore. That was the first time I had ever heard her make an association between her family and her healing. She understood what that woman needed. Family. Local church, we have the answer. Family. I want to close by sharing something with you. I was not planning to share this, but yesterday I felt that God wanted me to. I don't share this with everyone. Actually, I think I've only shared it 2 times. Because this is something that's very precious to me, but I felt God wanted me to share it with you. This happened to me one morning. I had never had a vision before in my life. God speaks in dreams and visions. I thank God it was a vision and not a dream, because old men dream. Maybe now I'll have a dream. I was in prayer one morning. I was preparing to speak on orphans. And I had a vision. And I was on my face. It was dark out. Nobody was up in my home. And I just saw something. You know, when we think about foster children, you don't see them as a group, because they're hidden behind walls. They're hidden in places separated from society. If you go to Romania, I'll take you to an institution, you can see over 300 kids. Now, we have those here, our mental institutions for children. You could see that here too, but we don't readily see them as a group. But in this vision, God showed me a whole picture of His perspective on the foster child. His perspective on the British foster child and the American foster child. How He sees it. Because He doesn't see them hidden. He sees them all. And in this vision, I saw this whole thing. And I immediately got up and went to my computer and just started typing it all down after I saw the whole vision. And I typed this whole thing here, and I haven't changed one word of this. As I saw it, after I was done, I went and I typed it. And I want to read it to you, because I believe this is God's perspective on how He sees the British orphan and the situation in your country. And after this, we're going to have a time of prayer. But would you stand, please? I want to read this to you. Would you stand? I call this the city of suffering children, because I saw them as a city, in a city. I saw a walled city with high gates, very dark, a dirty place. Satan ruled as king of the city. Inside are the destroyed and damaged lives of children, molested sexually, physically, and emotionally abused. Most are suffering, and some are dead already. Inside the city, many homosexuals live, and they are adopting the children in increasing numbers, showing them a warped idea of what family means. Other families in the city were housing the children as a way to make money. Every few weeks and months, they passed the children around to other people's homes. The children were scared. They were lost. They were lonely. Some were in mental institutions, others were in prisons. Some laid in the filth of the city, high on drugs, involved in all kinds of sin. Some of the girls of the city were molested by the wicked men of the city. Some girls had children of their own and populated the city even more. They were able to see the beautiful big churches beyond the gates of the dark city. They wondered if any of the people inside those churches would ever come and help them. They heard them sing about light and family, but they had no idea what it meant. Satan, who is king in the city, laughed at the church outside the walls. He taunted them all day long, "You will never come in here." The demonic soldiers laughed with them as they guarded the walls. The church didn't even hear Satan taunting because the parties they were having were too loud. Some people heard something on television, but they changed the channel because it was too depressing. Others were far away from the dark city, consumed in their sporting matches, movies, and entertainment. They didn't even know the dark city existed. Others didn't know the city was there, but they chose to never get near it. They didn't want to be tainted by such a dark place. Others just got used to the city being there. It's always been there. It will always be there. Some wanted to help, but they didn't know what to do. Some offered a prayer once in a while against the city, but their prayers were meager and only proved to strengthen the gates of the dark city. Some people worshiped for hours in their churches, and God powerfully dwelt in their worship service. When the music stopped and they left the church building, God said to them, "Now go, Jehoshaphat, go, Joshua, and take my worship to the city of suffering children. Use it to break down the gates." But they didn't go. Some lived in their fine homes, drove their fine cars to their fine restaurants, and talked about how blessed they were. But they never realized that they were poor, blind, and naked. They didn't realize that the blessing of God doesn't come from receiving, but in giving, in pouring out their lives for God and for others. The worst part about the dark city of suffering children was that the main gate of the city was open all day long for new, innocent, and vulnerable, hurt, scared children to enter. And they poured in by the thousands. Every inaction by the church to a newly destroyed life strengthened Satan's soldiers and caused them to laugh even more at the living God and his people. They laughed about the powerlessness of the soldiers of the defender of the fatherless. However, there were some who saw the filth and slime that flowed from the city. They were deeply grieved about it for many years. They fasted and they prayed and they asked God to save the children. Then something happened. God's people began to gather together in humility. They were embarrassed that God's reputation as the defender of the fatherless was not being respected. They asked God's forgiveness for bringing shame to his name. They asked God to use them to fight against the city and rescue hurting children. A new fire and boldness came in them when they began to read previously overlooked scriptures. Matthew 16:18, "Upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not overpower it." They understood this scripture to be an offensive one, to go against the gates of the city. They read 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 4. "The weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but divinely powerful for the destruction of fortresses." They read Matthew chapter 11, verse 12. "From the days of John the Baptist until now, the kingdom of heaven suffers violence, and violent men take it by force." Then the church got serious. They were weeping. They were fasting. They were praying. They gave God their money. They gave God their time. They gave God their very lives. They asked God to empower them to fight against the dark city and rescue children. A new boldness and fire came upon God's people. God filled them with a holy power they never knew before. They rose up with a new, fresh love of Christ for kids and came against the city. They began to break down the gates. They ripped holes in the fence. They were cutting the bars. Whole sections of the walls began to shake and fall. They started pulling kids through the holes in the wall of the darkness into the light of Christ. They brought these wounded, hurt children into their churches. They prayed for their healing and worked to bind up their wounds. The children found safety, love, and security for the first time in their lives. The church gave them a new home, and God gave them a new heart. My friends, as I said before, we're not asking you to adopt anyone. We're not asking you to go and foster. I believe it's time for us to enter the valley of weeping. Because unless we can enter into their pain, we will not know what to do for the foster child. And it's time now we as a church enter into their pain. We enter into their suffering. We want to open these altars for you to come and pray. To come and pray. We're going to pray for these children. We're going to pray for ourselves. We're going to pray and ask God's forgiveness. We're going to pray and ask God, we're sorry. God, we've missed it. Help us to enter into the cry of the orphan right under our noses. This altar here, you can come, you can pray at your seat, but we want to open this place. This is a valley of weeping we're coming into tonight. And I believe Almighty God will share His heart with us as we touch Him. He will share His heart with us. He will communicate His mercy to us and His love. You can come as I speak. Come as I speak. And if you feel you may want to come for a different reason. You may want to come because you're weighed down with sin. And I'll tell you what, you can't even feel God's heart if you're carrying all this sin. It's time to lay it down. It's time to lay it down and get serious with God. Say, God, forgive me. Cleanse me. I don't even understand what He's talking about because I got this sin in me. You're invited here. Let's come and let's meet with the Lord. Wherever you are, let's just begin to pray. Let's just begin to cry out to God. Let's just begin to meet with Him.